All right, good morning. Hey, I'm glad you're here today. I hope you're enjoying your October so far. October, I think, is probably my favorite month of the year for two reasons. One of them is fall starts creeping in, and I love fall. The second most important reason is playoff baseball. Are there any baseball fans left in the world? Okay, sweet. That makes me so happy. Let's get a little more specific to see how big a fan you are. Is there anyone who thought that what happened to the Dodgers last night was a beautiful thing? Yeah, there we go. All right. It's the right crew. The rest of you are like, please stop talking about baseball. Okay, I'll stop. We're gonna jump right in today. Last week, Jim kicked off a new series called Image of God, where we're talking about the fact that you and I, every other human being for that matter, we are image bearers of God, which means that we were created to represent God to the rest of the earth. Okay, last week, Jim walked us through the first chapter of Genesis. We learned that being image bearers of God is a status that's conveyed upon us. It's not a quality, it's not a characteristic, which means it's not something you can earn, it's not something you can lose. It's not like some people are image bearers and other people are not. It's just something that you are, right? Like if you are a human being, then you are an image bearer of God. You gotta represent God to the earth. You gotta represent God to other people, other image bearers in the way that you care for them. And you've got to represent God to the natural world and the way that we steward our resources and represent God in the arts, in the way that we create and in your office, in the way that you lead, you name it. Like whether you like it or not, or whether you believe it or not, your status, your role is an image bearer of God. You're supposed to represent him through every minute of the day, in every room and scenario you find yourself in, and with every other person you find yourself surrounded by. And Jim kind of set all that up last week. And the next 2 weeks are going to be super practical. It's basically just how does this image of God stuff apply to parenting and marriage? And today we're going to talk about parenting, like raising kids, whether it's they're your biological kids or adopted or fostered or inherited, you name it. What does it look like to be God's representative to our children? All right, and right away, like right off the bat, that's probably like a heavier and different way of viewing our parenting than you typically have, right? Like as a dad, as a mom, you are God's primary representative to your children. Like the way that your kids think about God are going to be primarily shaped by the way they think about you. That's pretty heavy stuff. And we don't usually think of it that way. I don't usually think of it that way, at least, right? Like, I think of myself as a lot of things with my kids. Like, I'm the bad guy whenever I've got to discipline them and put them in timeout or whatever. And I'm like their one of their providers who puts food on the table and clothes on their back. And I'm their self-taught doctor when they stay home from school sick. And I'm their chauffeur and their chef and their coach and their entertainer and their teacher. It's like, I'm a lot of things to my kids, but like very rarely do I truly grasp my primary, most important role. I am God's primary representative to my kids. What does that mean? It means, for example, when they hear that God is a comforter, they're going to measure that based on the amount of comfort they feel in my home, for better or for worse. When they hear that God is a father, they're going to think about my characteristics, for better or for worse. And when they hear that God loves them, their whole idea of love is being shaped by what they see between me and my wife, Allie, or what they feel from Allie and I toward them. It's like for the 18 years that these kids are, hopefully just 18, under my roof, their view and understanding of God is going to be most primarily shaped by their view and understanding of me and Allie. It's heavy stuff. Like there's a lot of stake here. And so it's worth talking about today. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to tackle the idea of what it looks like to be good and faithful representatives of God to our kids. To clear the air before I truly jump in, I just want to let you know that like I'm preaching to myself today as much as I'm preaching to you. Okay, Allie and I, we've got three kids. It goes Emery, Micah, Chloe, ages 10, 8, and 5. I in no way consider myself to be an expert on parenting. In no way. Okay. Like 95% of the time, I feel like I'm screwing the whole thing up. I have many nights where I lay in bed and I think about the way I parented that day, and I just start calculating like how much is this gonna cost in counseling fees when they're older. So I'm no expert, but I am in the trenches with you. And so like Allie and I are in the thick of parenting right now. And so I'm preaching to myself today as much as I'm preaching to you, okay? Enough setup, let's jump in. So if it's true that we're God's representatives to our kids, then our goal should obviously be to represent God well, to like image him faithfully. And if we're gonna have any shot at doing that well, that means you and I have to get to know our God. Like we have to know who it is we're trying to represent to our kids. And so for the rest of our time together, we're gonna kind of zoom in on three different characteristics of God, okay? God has many characteristics, but these are three characteristics that I believe should shape our parenting the most. It's like, if we could do these three things well, then we're off to a great start on being imagers of God to our children. And those three characteristics of God are attention, affection, and authority. Okay, I'll be honest, I wish I came up with that myself because the three A's is very like pastory and catchy and all that. I didn't come up with it. I also can't remember who to credit. I came across this years ago. I don't remember if it was in a sermon or a book or a podcast or whatever. If you're out there and you're like, that's my stuff, I'm sorry. And thank you because it's been helpful. So I came across this years ago and I don't live up to the three of them perfectly, but they've been really good guidelines for me to figure out like, what does it look like to be a parent and how should I interact with my kids? My parenting should represent the attention, affection, and authority of God to my kids. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna walk through each one of those. We'll break down how does God embody that characteristic and then how might we embody that characteristic as parents. And we'll start with attention. All right, attention, cover to cover, all throughout the Bible, we encounter the fact that we have God's attention. We have his undivided attention. It wouldn't be wrong to say that the Bible is one long book about how God has historically paid attention to the needs of his people. Like there's nothing in that book that even alludes to even just the possibility that maybe sometimes God is too busy for you or he's too distracted for you or maybe he's just, you know, he's ignoring you right now because he's sick of you because it's always the same old crap with you. So God's going to go get some alone time. Like that you don't see that in the Bible, right? You see the opposite of that all throughout scripture. I mean, for example, the theme of God paying great attention to us. It's one of the primary themes of the book of Psalms. Okay, just to give you a few examples, look at these. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are attentive to their cry. Or you hear, O Lord, the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them and again, you listen to their cry. Or in the morning, O Lord, you hear my voice. And in the morning, I lay my requests before you and I wait in expectation. Or does he who implanted the ear not hear? Or does he who formed the eye not see? I could go on and on, but the theme of God's focused attention is all throughout the Psalms. It's all throughout the Old Testament in general. The Old Testament is the history of God paying attention to the Israelites, his people. The theme's all throughout the New Testament. Quick example of that, 1 John 5 says, this is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. John just said, man, if there's like one thing you can be absolutely confident of, it's the fact that God hears you. But then most importantly for us as Jesus followers, this idea of offering undivided attention, it characterized the life of Jesus Christ. If you go read through the four gospels, you go read about this man's life, you see that he had whoever he was with at the moment, didn't matter who he was with, they had his full attention. Right? There are some moments in the Gospels where Jesus disappears by himself, always to pray. And then he comes back and he surrounds himself with people and those people have his undivided attention. And so all throughout the Bible, cover to cover, there's this picture being painted of a God who is never too busy for us, never too distracted for us, and he's never spinning too many plates to pay attention or spend time with us. The God of the Bible is the great giver of attention. And so if we're supposed to image God to our children, then the question becomes, do we offer the same amount of attention to our kids that God offers us? And I don't know about you, but for me, that's a very convicting question. Okay, I'll speak for myself right now and, you know, I'll just speak for myself. I'll let you evaluate your own life and evaluate your own parenting. But for me, like, it's so easy to escape into distraction when I'm around my kids. For me, I work from home. So, you know, the typical weekday routine, I wake up and get the kids ready. I take them all to school. I drop all three of my kids off at school. I come back, I work all day. And all day that I'm working alone in my house, I'm missing them all day long. right? But then on more days than I want to admit, I go pick them up. And in the time, like 20 minute time it takes to pick them up and get them back to my home, I'm already telling myself I need a break, right? And that's because, you know, if you have little kids or you had little kids, it's like the chaos is immediate and it's unceasing, right? It's like they get in my car, the volume goes through the roof. Like in the course of a typical 20 minute drive, I will hear hysterical laughter. I will hear hysterical weeping. I'll break up about 10 fights. I'll answer about 1,000 questions. It's just immediate. The other day, Emery gets in the car. She immediately asks, why do so many people die on Mount Everest? What is frostbite? What is amputation? And does the color of your eyes affect the way you see the world? It was all, that was all one, one long, big question. I didn't even have time to say, like, how was your day? It was just immediate. And so for me, it's like, it's easy to escape into distraction, like to escape into a good book or escape into playoff baseball or escape into reading the news on my phone. But at the same time, it's foolish of me. Like on a typical school day, I maybe get 4 hours with my kids. And then here I am sinking one or two of them into escaping from them. And I feel super convicted about this, like right now, especially because Chloe, my youngest daughter, she's 5. She recently called me out on this. It was rough. To be fair to myself, though, Chloe is a talker, okay? Like my other kids, Em and Micah, you ask them how their day was, and they're like, I don't remember, just like a normal day. You ask Chloe how her day is, like, buckle up, because you're going to get, like, the whole thing. She's that kid who's like, you know, at 8:14, I entered the doors of school and turned right and saw Charlotte, said hello, turned left, the sun slanted through the windows, illuminated a sticker, scratch and sniff, the smell of grapes. Like, you're gonna get like this really long, long story. And so a few days ago, I'm at home, she's like 20 minutes into the story of her day, and I'm totally zoned out on my phone. I'm scrolling through news headlines, and I'm giving her the occasional like, oh, wow, oh, interesting, you don't say, that kind of thing. But honestly, it's terrible, I'm just not listening, until her little voice cuts through like that womp, womp, womp that I've been listening to, and I hear her say, and it breaks my heart, because she's honestly like the sweetest little kid, and she's got the cutest little voice. But I hear her say, she goes, Dad, I'm gonna wait to tell you the next part of my day because it's really important and you're not listening. And I felt terrible. I dropped my phone like it's a hot potato. I apologize. I start listening to her. Of course, like the really important part of her day was that some kid named Lucas, I think, already knows how to whistle. But that's not the point. The point is that she recognized and knew and called me out on the fact that I wasn't paying any attention to her. And good on her. I deserved it. All right, how can we image God? How do we represent God well to our kids? We can give them our full and undivided attention. Right? We answer the questions about frostbite and amputation. They were kind of fun to answer. We get on the floor. We play chutes and ladders with them, even though it's literally the worst game I've ever played. We foster good conversation at dinner. Side note, I've had older parents, their kids are grown and left the home, older parents that I respect, I believe it to be true. They've told me this, like half the battle of parenting is just making sure you eat dinner together most of the nights, like, and have good conversation at dinner. Like, we should give our kids our attention. Right? As parents, we should be teaching ourselves to become attuned to our kids' different personalities, because like Emery's biggest fears are different than Micah's biggest fears, just like Micah's biggest needs are different than Chloe's biggest needs. But how am I gonna know that if I'm never paying any attention? It's like whether our kids are 8 or 18, they need our attention. They need to see that we're not too busy for them, we're not too distracted for them, and we're not spinning too many plates to be able to spend some time with them. We need to give them our attention if we're gonna represent God well. Give your kids your attention. Okay, second characteristic of God that I think we should embody as parents is his affection. And again, this is cover to cover an undeniable theme of the Bible. The Bible is the narrative history of God's great love and affection for us. There is a reason that John 3:16 is the most popular, most well-known verse in all of the Bible. You know this one. For God so loved the world, he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Like, that verse is so popular and well-known because it perfectly summarizes in one sentence the story of the whole Bible. who God is and what he did for us. It's in one short sentence, the truth that God is a God of great love and affection for us. We're told that God, his love is so vast and great for us that you and I will never truly comprehend it this side of death. That's Ephesians 3. It says, and I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the saints to just even grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to get to know this love, even though it surpasses your knowledge and understanding, so that you may be filled to the measure of the fullness of God. God's love and affection for us is so wide and long and high and deep that we can't truly even comprehend it. If we're going to image God well to our children, the question is, do we offer them the same kind of affection that God offers us? Like, our kids need to hear and see and feel our affection. They need to know beyond the shadow of a doubt that we love them, that we love them in a way that's so wide and high and long and deep that they're not even going to understand it. Like, they're not going to assume that. They need to hear it and see it and feel it. They need to hear it. We need to tell our kids that we love them. Like, it's not possible for them to hear that too much. This is one of the kind of few aspects of parenting that I think Allie and I are doing pretty well right now. Like, our kids hear about our love for them all of the time, multiple times a day. Like, I don't go take the dog for a walk without telling everybody I love them before leaving the house. Tell your kids you love them. Tell them why you love them. Not just I love you, but I love you because. I love you because you're smart, you're generous, you're kind, you're wild, like whatever it is, speak with affection. Our sons need to hear that they're brave and strong and courageous, and our daughters need to hear that they're adored and they're beautiful. Chloe and I have this thing where she answers just habitually now because I've said it so many times, but it's this thing where randomly throughout the day, I'll look at her and I'll go, how'd you get so pretty? I say it almost angrily like that. How'd you get so pretty? And then she just goes, because mommy's pretty. And then after that, I go, how'd you get so weird? She goes, because you're weird. And I hope I'm doing that bit with Chloe when she's 40 and I'm 73. Because until the day I die, I want her to know that she's beautiful and I absolutely adore her. Speak your affection. Our kids need to hear it. They need to see it too. They're gonna see it in the way that we treat our spouses, and they're gonna see it in the way that we sacrifice for our families, and they're gonna see it in the way that we look deeply into their eyes when they're scared or troubled. And they also need to feel our affection. Hug them, kiss them, hold their hand, right? Put your arm around them while you're watching football later this afternoon. High five them when they do something awesome, because they do awesome things all the time. Brush their tears from their cheeks, braid their hair. They need to hear and see and feel our affection, because here's the heavy truth. You can really screw up a human being by withholding your affection from them. I've been a pastor for going on 13 or 14 years, something like that, I can't remember, but it's been a while, and it's honestly heartbreaking to me, the sheer amount of full-grown men that I've talked to who tell me through tears that they never heard their dad say, I love you, and it's still train-wrecking their lives. And I've done student ministry long enough to know that if a daughter doesn't feel affection from her father, not always, but typically, she'll go find it from the first boy her age who will give it to her. And if you've done this poorly as a parent, it's not too late. It's really not. It's not too late to kind of like pull it together. I know we're tired. I know parenting is hard, but you can do this. You have to do this. And some of us are going like, dude, it's too late for me. Like, I screwed that one up a long time ago. My kid's 38 now, lives on the other side of the country. It's not too late. You don't know. You don't know the amount of change you might kick off in that young man's life by just calling him and saying, I need to tell you something I've never told you before. I need to tell you I love you and why. You don't know what would happen, what would change. It's not too late. If we're gonna image God well as parents, then we've got to offer our kids not just attention, but affection. Okay, third characteristic of God that I think that we should embody as parents is authority. And I wanna carefully explain this one, so I'm gonna ask that you carefully listen to me. Okay, God is a God of authority. That's a very good thing for us. We want him to be a God of authority. We need him to have power. We need him to be in control. The truth is, a situation is only safe, Like whether you're 10 years old at recess or you're 40 years old in a marketing meeting, a situation is only safe if someone in the room has recognized authority and knows how to wield it well. For Christians, that someone in the room is Jesus Christ. He was very honest with us. He goes, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." And it's Jesus's authority that makes all of the other wonderful parts about him possible. It's because of his authority. His authority is the reason that he can empower us. And his authority is the reason he is allowed to tell us hard truth when we need to hear it the most. And his authority is the reason that he disciplines us. And because he can wield his authority well, the Bible describes his discipline as an act of love, not as an act of anger or hatred. The truth is, Jesus has the authority to forgive us only because he first held the authority to judge and condemn us. He chose not to. He chose to forgive. We want Jesus to be a savior with authority. He describes himself as a friend to us, which is beautiful, but we can't get it mixed up. He's not our homeboy. He is a friend in our life with great, ultimate authority. We want him to be a savior with authority. What does this kind of Christ-like authority look like in our parenting? Well, I think it's best described in Proverbs 22, verse 6. Goes like this. You might have heard this one. It says, "Train a child in the way he should go, and if you do that, when he's old, he will not turn from it." Train a child in the way he or she should go. And I love that picture and that, like, that metaphor of a trainer, because think about it. Okay, think about a trainer at the gym. If you pay a trainer at the gym to be your trainer, you are placing yourself under the authority of that person from the time you walk into the building until the time that you walk out again. Okay, what does this person have authority over in your life? Actually, quite a bit. Okay, they have the authority over creating a plan that's gonna get you where you wanna go. They have the authority, they're the keeper and the creator of the plan for your fitness, whether you wanna slim down or bulk up or whatever it is, right? They're the keeper of the plan. They can hold you accountable to the plan. They can call you out when you stray from the plan. They have the authority to be your teacher, right? They're gonna educate you and kind of guide you along the way and point out what you're doing wrong because it's gonna hurt you. And then they can encourage you and they can empower you only because of their authority. It's because they're the authority in the room on all matters of fitness. And so when they say good job, it actually matters because they know what they're talking about. They are the authority. And then most importantly for this training metaphor, most importantly is this: you only place a trainer in authority over you when they embody what they are training you in. Right? If you want to lose 90 pounds, you're not going to hire a trainer who's 90 pounds overweight. You're just not. And if you want to bulk up and get ripped, you're not going to ask me to train you, right? You might ask Jim, but not me, right? Why? Because you should only place a trainer in authority over your life if they embody the thing that they're trying to train you in. This is the kind of authority we're talking about when Proverbs says, "Train our children in the ways that they should go." Like, it sounds weird to some people in 2023, but like our kids, they need our authority. They're floundering without it. They're anchorless without it. They need help getting through life. They need our authority. And what I'm about to say, it might sound harsh, and I don't know, it might be because I'm 38, even though I don't look it. And I keep being told it's a good thing. When it's like, yeah, but I've carded for every beer I buy, but it might be because I'm 38. I've been an old soul since the beginning. So maybe it's that. But for me personally, I don't understand what seems to be this trend of parenting where it seems like the parents' ultimate goal is to be liked all the time by their kids. I don't understand it. Like, don't clap yet. That's a strange thing to clap for. My kids hate me. And here's why I don't understand it. It's because you don't like the trainer. When the trainer corrects you, right? You don't like the trainer when he says you're doing this completely wrong. You don't like the trainer when you're dog tired and he keeps pushing you to keep going because he knows you're capable of doing something you think is impossible. You don't like that, but you listen and you respond to and you obey a good trainer because you trust that they know what they're talking about and they have your best interest in mind. Our goal as parents is not to be our kid's best buddy. Okay, to point to Jesus again, hear me, we should be great friends to our children. but for the 18 years that they live under our roof. Don't get it mixed up. We're not their homeboys. We are friends with authority. You are dad. You are mom. Train your children in the ways they should go. Just like a trainer at the gym, like we have the responsibility and the authority to create a plan. We're the keeper and creator of the plan, right? We need to figure out a plan, a strategy to get them where they need to be without them getting hurt along the way. We have the authority to be their teachers, right? We have to educate them and guide them along the way, help them make adjustments in what it looks like to be a human being. We have to have the authority to tell them when they've done something wrong. It's going to hurt them if we don't. And then we can empower them and encourage them only because we hold all of that authority. Like basically in our homes, as parents, we should be the authority in the room on all matters of life for 18 years. Hear me, I didn't say expert. I said the authority in the room. What I mean by that is like, I'm not necessarily an expert really at anything, okay? But in my house, Allie and I are the authorities on the matters of all things related to what it means to be a foot, which is my last name, in case. Some of you don't know my last name, and you're like, what is this dude talking about? In my house, we're trying to raise our kids. Allie and I are responsible for that. Right, we have the authority on all matters related to what it means to be a foot. And so like the other day, Chloe, she spent her evening making personalized bookmarks for every single person in her class because she's a sweetheart. And so I just encouraged her and I praised her. Why? Because foots are kind and generous. I'm the authority on that matter in my house. On the other hand, a few weeks ago, Micah got mad, slapped Emery, his older sister, in the stomach. I sent him to his room. I tried to calm down. I got about halfway there. I went back in. I've told him very firmly, you're never going to do that in my house ever again. Why? Because you're a foot. And the men in my family, we stand up for, we protect the women in our lives, even if they're your annoying older sister. I'm the authority on that matter in my house. Right? Micah apologized. I forgave him. I had the authority to forgive him because I first held the authority to chew his butt out. Our kids need our authority. They don't need another best friend. They have those. Man, they need someone who's been a little further along in life and just decided to come on back for them and hold their hand and go, hey, avoid that mistake. I made that one. That one hurts. And then over here, we're going to take a right because that is just a way better path. That's a way better way to live your life. They need that authority. They need you to train them because we're trying to raise like strong, kind, generous, brave, humble, self-sacrificial, Christ-like human beings. They can't figure it out on their own. They need someone with authority to guide them. But then again, most importantly, all right, just like the gym training metaphor, most importantly, if you want to wield authority in your home in a way that is healthy, it's not self-serving, it's not micromanaging, it's not controlling, it's not abusive, then we had better embody what we're trying to train our kids in. We've got to practice what we preach. We can't tell our kids not to mouth off at us if they see us do that with our wives all the time. We can't look at our kids and say, you should respect me if they see us disrespecting our husbands all the time. We have to embody what we're trying to train our kids in. We don't have to be perfect at it, but we need to be aiming at perfection, right? We have to embody what we're trying to train our kids in. Practice what you preach. And the reason we have to do that is because Christ-like authority, even though authority out in the other parts of our culture and world don't work this way, but Christ-like authority is not about a power trip. It is not about control. It is not about feeling like the man of the house or the woman of the house or anything like that. Instead, Christ-like authority is about the self-sacrificial journey of lovingly training our kids to get where they need to go without getting hurt along the way. Our kids need our authority. And so what does it look like to image God as mom or dad? How do we represent God to our kids? Well, we do that by first and foremost understanding and then living under the attention and affection and authority of our God so that we can then turn and represent those characteristics of him to our kids. Our kids should see the attention, affection, and authority of their loving God displayed, represented through the lives of their loving mom and dad. And so a quick challenge for us, and then we'll pray and we'll get out of here, all right? So for those of us who wanna lean in and we wanna like ramp it up and mature a bit more in how we're imaging God to our kids, here's a challenge. You take that list of the three characteristics of God, attention, affection, and authority. You hand that list to someone you really trust. Okay, if you're married, this should be your spouse. If you're a single parent, hand the list to the person you trust the most who's not one of your kids. And then hand them that list and say, okay, could you please rank these in order based on what I most need to pay attention to? Okay, so like number one is the thing that I need to work on right now. Number two is the thing that like I need to keep an eye on it, but we'll get to it after I work on number one. And then number three is the thing that's like, that's the thing I'm doing the best at right now. Have someone rank them for you. For me, here's how I'd rank these characteristics in my life. It would go attention, and then authority, and then affection. So from the ground up, affection is the one I think I'm doing the best at right now. I think my kids hear and see and feel my affection a lot. Authority is the one I've got to keep my eye on. For me, what that looks like is I don't lack authority in my home. I'm not the pushover dad. I'm just on the other end of the spectrum where I can tend to be like really strict and hard driving and lack mercy and lack grace. And so I need to keep an eye on that, right? I obviously need to keep an eye on it because Allie always jokes that she's going to buy me a Von Trapp whistle, which like from The Sound of Music where the dad blows the whistle and the kids are like ready for their chores. So obviously I should keep my eye on that one. But for me, the number one thing I've got to work on is attention. I got to work on that like immediately. It's priority number one. I've got to stop disappearing into books and into my phone. I've got to engage better. I've got to listen to Chloe's 30-minute long stories. I need to foster better conversation at the dinner table. Big one for me is I've got to stop letting them have extra long Nintendo Switch turns just because I'm enjoying the peace and quiet. Like it's selfish. Like attention towards my kids is the number one thing that personally I need to work on right now. What is that thing for you? That's the challenge if you want to take it up this week. Have someone rank that list for you and then just focus on the one thing this week. You know, don't get overwhelmed. You've already made a bunch of really great steps if you can just become aware of something that you need to mature in. So become aware of it, see how it plays out in your day-to-day life and then put some intentionality into it and let's work on imaging God well by offering his attention and affection and authority to our kids. All right, let's pray. God, ultimately, I thank you for the kind of father that you are. You're such a good and loving father. You're endlessly patient with us. Your love, like we looked at today, like we literally can't comprehend it. So we're sitting out here thinking we're screw ups and you're just thinking like, man, I just love you. I just wanna spend more time with you. So I thank you for the kind of father you are. God, for the parents in the room, I pray for clarity and discernment, some wisdom for what it is that we need to most mature in. God, I believe that the point of this truth from you is not to browbeat and not to make us feel bad. So could you help us to feel your grace right now to kind of let ourselves off the mat for the different aspects of parenting that we haven't done very well? God, would you give us the courage to try to do it differently and to try to represent you well? God, I also want to pray for, like, this is just for everyone in the room because we're all children. Like, we're all children of someone. And so anytime I talk about parenting or kids, like, for a lot of us in the room, that brings up a lot of pain because it's like we're thinking of kids that we lost or parents that we lost or we're thinking of parents that we wish were, like, loved us differently or better or we're thinking of kids that we wish would stop wandering and come back home. And so it just comes with a lot of pain. So God, for anyone who's feeling pain, would you bring comfort right now? And would you help them to see that like underneath what we talk, like the foundation of what we talked about today is who you are. And who you are is a God who gives us your full and undivided attention. You weren't looking the other way when we grew up with the parents we had. You weren't looking the other way when our kids went off and wandered. You're not looking the other way right now. We have your attention. We have your affection. You love us deeply. You're empathetic. You feel our pain with us. And then we have your authority, which means you have power. You are in control. We can trust your promises when you say that one day, as crazy as it might sound, I will work all things to your good. So God, for any of us feeling pain right now, would you help us to see the foundation of what we talked about today? It's all about who you are and how amazing you are. And so I thank you for who you are, and I pray this in your son's wonderful name, Jesus Christ. Amen.